The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Tuesday, the 23rd of October, 2018. It's quite bearish out there today again. But on the podcast today, I have Phil Cleggett, Head of Corporate Development at Emerson, EML is ticker there, and Phil discusses the potential for very low capital cost for electrical and gas supply at their Chemisit Potash project in Morocco. Also on the podcast, Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications, talking about the following companies: Powerhouse Energy, that's PHE, Bloomsbury Publishing, BMY, Salt Lake Potash, SO4, and Vast Resources, VAST. Plus, as always, I have two lists, top fives, of the most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs. By the way, you can see the top 10 of these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Tired of using different sites to research companies? Vox Markets aggregates key financial details, pricing data, and company news into one place. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Phil Cleggett, Head of Corporate Development at Emerson. It's EML ticker. Phil, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me again, Justin, and good morning to you.
Yeah, and you're from in sunny Australia, I take it, and we're in frosty old England.
Well, I am in sunny Australia. I have to get back here for a bit of sun once in a while. Keep up my tan, you know how it is.
Exactly. Okay, well, you've had some news out about the gas and electricity supply to your project there in Chemisit in Morocco. But before we get into the news and what it means, the significance of that, explain, please, Phil, Emerson, what's it all about?
So, Justin, Emerson, as you know, but as your listeners may not, is a potash developer. We acquired the Chemisit project, which is in northern Morocco. We acquired that as part of a relisting, and we relisted onto the LSE main market in June of this year. So we've only been relisted a few short months. And what we're doing is we believe we're making great strides towards demonstrating the technical and economical strengths of the project, and we're going to do that by firstly releasing our scoping study, which is due in just a few short months, and we're very excited about the project, we're very excited about Morocco, and we're very excited about the potash market at the moment as well.
Yeah, okay, well, the news out today, I mean, we already know, you can see a little graph, it's like some bar chart kind of thing, of associated with costs, and you are a tiny little mark on the bar chart and compared to the other big bars there, and that's how low sort of capital expenditure is. But this out-today news extends that argument, and you're saying you've got potential here for very low capital costs, electrical and gas supply. And tell us why that is then, Phil. What's happening here?
So what we've done, Justin, is we, from when we relisted, we said that as a management team and as a company, we believed that this project had the potential to be a very low cost on a capex basis potash development. At the time, it was our belief. We thought we were right, but we didn't expect investors to believe us on our word. So what we've been doing is we've been demonstrating it piece by piece. This is the third one announcement that we've put out about specific parts of the scoping study that have been completed. And today's is about the electrical and gas supply capex. And what we've shown is that it's only going to cost us $5.7 million to connect to electricity and to have gas supply during the operations of the mine, compared to comparable projects that are out there in the market, which can spend up to $80 million on getting the same things for their mine, which are obviously necessary. Mm-hmm. And that's a saving of, you know, over 93%. And we're talking about $75 million. It's fantastic. And we think it's coupled with the previous two announcements, which were the logistics solution, so getting our roads constructed and to get us to the port, and also the decline design to get down to the mineralization. We think we've gone a long way down the road of demonstrating that belief that we have that this will be a very low capex potash development. And of course, we're very excited about proving something that we said we believed from day one.
Yeah, and is this you know, low capital expenditure on the electrical or electricity and gas, is it just due to the proximity of infrastructure, is it?
Yeah, that's exactly right. What we will need to do for the electricity is connect to the the closest wires, the closest overhead lines. And in our case, it's fantastic. They're 5.5 kilometres away at the closest point. Or if it turns out that we need to go to a substation, it's only 7 kilometres away. Now, that is very short. We're very lucky that the electricity wires happen to be there. So that saves us a lot of money. The second part of it is the gas supply. Mm-hmm. And what we found out through our investigations is that there are suppliers in Morocco who are willing to come to site and build a storage tanks for our gas needs purely on their own cost, and they would own the gas tanks. And all we'd have to do to get them to do that is sign up for a relatively long-term contract, but the contract would be at market prices. They're willing to do it to lock us in as a customer for 10 years, and the price would be referenced back to the market price. We know through our discussions that, that is the way that business is often done in Morocco for a customer of our size, and obviously, again, that saves us a huge amount of money up front. So we're very lucky. I'll say lucky because it's not something that we did by design, but the investors into this company will benefit from that luck that we have from where we are.
Yeah. And just going into the project itself there, you've got a JORC resource estimate of 311.4 million tonnes at 10.2%. And of course, this study here, you found out what the electricity and gas and everything else you found out will be feeding into the scoping study. And that's when is that due again, Phil?
That's right. We've said publicly that that's coming, that's aimed to be out in the first quarter of next year, so the first 3 months of 2019. We're well and truly on track to hit that timeline and hopefully towards the front end of those 3 months. And we're very excited about what that scoping study will show in totality. Like I said, this is the third part of the scoping study that we've already released as they finish one by one. There's more to come. There's bits of it that we're still working on, but we are very much on track for that first quarter release date for the full scoping study, which will tie it all together, show the full capex, the opex, the prices that we expect to receive, and some economics around what the project should look like in operation.
Yeah, and just a quick overview of the potash market there. So at the moment, what's it like?
Yeah, it's really good, actually. So potash had a bit of a quiet time a couple of years ago. About 2 years ago, it hit its lowest point in a long time. Luckily for this project, we believe that that is a price point that would still justify building a project such as Chemisset due to its low capex, which we're proving one by one. But since that low point, prices have moved up. I think just last week they hit another high. They've been inching higher and higher. So in Brazil, which is a big market and is a market that we'd be targeting just across the Atlantic from Morocco, the prices have topped $350 a tonne just last week, and that's up from a low of 220 a couple of years ago. So they're up more than 60%, and that's starting to be seen in the existing producers' quarterly results. They're getting better and better, and that we hope that it's something that we'll be able to capitalise on from a timing point of view, but it's a fantastic market to be in at the moment. It's going really well. It's up a lot more than most other commodities from their lows, and it's probably not getting talked about a lot, but that's okay by us because when we put out our scoping study, it'll really be demonstrated how we benefit from those high prices that we're seeing in the market at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, one final thing to do, Phil. If someone's listening to this, likes the sound of this, but are not yet following the story, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Okay, so one, we've talked about it a lot in our announcements, that we believe that low capex is a huge part of getting any potash project off the ground. We're a long way down the road to proving that this will be a low capex development, and there's more to come. The second one is the scoping study in totality. It's almost imminent. It's very close to being completed, and once we've got that out, it really show the benefits and the virtues of this project. And I think it's a fantastic bit of news to come out. I don't think anybody would want to miss that. And the third one is, as we just spoke about, the potash market is going fantastically, and it's a space you should be investing in, because although it's great at the moment, short term, long term, more mouths to feed, less land to grow food, fertilizer is the answer. I think that's accepted, and it's a place that everybody should be investing in.
Excellent stuff. Phil, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll be catching up again in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Fantastic. Thank you for your time, Justin, and look forward to speaking again soon.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications. How's things, Al?
Well, I'm taking the drugs, just. I'm hoping I can keep this impending bad chest and cold.
All right. I thought you meant recreational drugs then. It's a family show. I'll calm down.
Yeah, but hey, that's only for the weekend.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I dropped in drug taking parlance. I dropped a couple of paracetamol about an hour ago, so they're starting to kick in. So I'm feeling a bit better. But my wife unfortunately has this chest infection, and she's coughing away, not feeling too good. So it's in the house.
Yeah. Do you know what? Same here. I hate to be a whinger. I don't know if I do, actually. I quite enjoy it.
But, But
we all had some in the house last week. I was on antibiotics, and I've come off them. And I got up this morning, and I normally exercise every morning on the treadmill. I literally was feeling achy. I thought, I can't be doing with it. I literally did my early morning podcast and laid down for half an hour. But, I'm hopefully going to get some more. And, in fact, listen to us banging on like a bunch of old whinging men.
We have to talk about this, mate. Yeah. People don't want to know this. They don't want to know about our ailments.
The Daily Ailment Podcast with Alan Green and Justin Wade. What's wrong with you today, Al? Right.
It's the leg.
Do you know what? I've got to laugh. There's a guy on Late Night. I don't know if he's still on there. BBC Radio Wales. And Chris Needs, his name is. And he has a regular audience of many old people in Wales, you know. And they call up and he says, "How are you then, Flow?" And they will actually, rather than, you know, treat that as a nicety or pleasantry, where you just say, "Oh, fine, thanks," they will actually tell you all their ailments, you know. "Oh, well, Chris, I'm not feeling too well, to be honest. I had an achy leg." And that's his entire show.
It's the gout as well.
It's a very popular show where old people just come on and tell him how they're feeling, basically. it's ridiculous, you know. You know, you get the stage when you're old, I suppose. You know, when someone says, "How are you?" You haven't got a lot to say apart from how you are, so you actually go through telling me exactly what's wrong with you.
Yeah. And, I'm glad you asked. I've got this.
The listening figures for it have been phenomenal for years. They didn't dip. You know, there's always a renewed audience or old audience, but I mean, you know, there's always people getting old and falling into that demographic who just want to tune in and tell people about their ailments. You know, so there we are. Maybe we'll get into that. Maybe that's where we should be heading after Shays, Al. Cool.
Yes, ailments. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, let's look at things that are going up and down. Not according to health wise, maybe on the markets here. What are you looking at now?
Okay, Powerhouse Energy (PHE). I've not spoken about this for a while, but we have discussed in the past. But they've taken some significant steps forward in the past few weeks. Just to reiterate the background for listeners that may not know about them, Powerhouse Energy have developed a hydrogen production technology from using waste plastic and used tires. So they go in, they're burned at very high temperature, and at the other end it produces hydrogen gas that can be used for fuel cells and so on, and also can create electrical power as well. And they have a number of joint ventures, in particular with Wastricity, to develop the technology and to implement some commercial testing with companies around the UK. And it's moving closer to first commercial. So this is a company that's very much at the R&D stage, but it's hit various milestones. And the most significant one that we heard about in the past few weeks was what was called an independent technology assessment by a company called DNVGL, where the technology, the engineering, was looked at by an independent third party, and this independent third party verified the technology absolutely all the way through, which is a very strong endorsement for the company. And when you're pushing the envelope as Powerhouse are, because it's new technology, it's not used commercially yet, these are the sort of steps you need to take. We know the company's been talking to Toyota, we know the company's been talking to other manufacturers around the world, but this US. Third-party endorsement is a very significant step forward for Powerhouse, which is still a micro-cap company. Shares currently trading at 0.44p, and the shares have been up as high as 0.6 and down as low as 0.3. But that's the nature of a company at this stage of its evolution. But very significant step forward, and I'm sure as we go forward with this endorsement under their belt, they can then go to the companies with whom they want to implement trial programs, and that will give them a series of strings to their bow, which I'm sure they can bring the first set technology into market and actually start to move towards becoming a commercial entity.
Yeah, well, no, I was quite encouraged by that. And do you know what? I tweeted this out, and I said something like, this is validation of the technology there, because there's been some cynics and some skeptics about this. And it's taken a long time to evolve this technology, I know. So I understand why there's been many investor burnt here. And they, of course, they've turned into a cynic, and they've gone from being a lover to a hater, you know. But I think this company, so I tweeted that out. I said, validation that this tech is working. And DNV, the company itself, retweeted me. And so I did a Google search, pretty much, and I looked at them. They've got 14,500 employees. They've got headquartered in Oslo, Norway. And their revenue last year was shy of 19 billion Norwegian kroner, which is about £2 billion. So it's a big company. It's a proper global player. It's not a sort of fly by night little, you know, one man outfit that's that will give them a couple of quid and they'll give you a certificate or something. It's a proper company, you know. So I think this third, you know, so independent testing and verification of Powers is very significant. And the fact that Keith bought $100,000 worth of shares. When I looked at his wage, apparently he's around about $160,000 a year. So putting $100,000 of your own money into an option, he bought options at 0.6. Now you could have bought in the open market for 0.48 at the time, I think, which I did. I thought, well, if Keith's buying $100,000 worth at 0.6, I'm going to buy cheaper than him. So I held some shares anyway, but I bought some more just out of there. I thought, he's not putting $100,000 worth of shares. He's not buying that because nothing's going on. He's trying to, you know, ramp the stock. I believe now after this, and like, is it David Ryan, the
technical director? That's right. Yeah.
First of all, he came on board and he's from ThyssenKrupp, you know, another global player. He had his own sort of department there, and he sort of, you know, verified it. But I understand people may say, well, you know, he may be biased because he's an employee, but he's put money into the company. So now you've got this independent company doing it, and it's all going the right direction. Of course, they haven't commercially signed a contract, but this is looking very good, isn't it? It's looking like it's the technology is there.
I've met David Ryan. I've met sort of members of the board, know Keith pretty well, and these people are passionate about getting this company across the line. They believe in the technology. They've got some investor support. Some of these investors have put an awful lot of money into the company because they absolutely believe in the technology. And just like you, we were sort of actively putting information out about the plastic waste problem and how this company basically will solve that. It won't solve in one fell swoop, obviously, but it has a technology.
I love that.
It has the technology to solve the problem by taking that waste, non-recyclable waste, and burning it and producing hydrogen. So it's a fantastic solution. And every time we put something out, we had the naysayers out there, we had the doomsters that came on and clearly looking for a quick turn on the company and lost money. But this is a long-term investment. You're investing in blue sky technology, and this is going to be huge. And this is a company evolving, changing. It's got the seal of approval, and as you say, DNV are a huge organization. That's a very strong statement of validation from DNV, and it's very exciting. The first commercial contract is going to be an absolute game changer for Powerhouse, and they're edging ever closer to it. So it's at a really, really exciting juncture.
Yeah, absolutely. And at the moment, you know, look at the share price here. And so, obviously, do your own research. They may need funds. They may need whatever. The share price is 0.445. Now, Keith, you know, took his options out to 0.6. So, I mean, always do your research. They may need funding, operational funding going forward. But it's one of the stories I do like. Like you say, the problem with plastic, it's too good. I mean, when they invented plastic, they didn't realize how robust it is. It's so robust, it doesn't degrade.
It doesn't,
you know?
It doesn't degrade. And we've got these oceans of, well, these huge masses of plastic that are floating in the Pacific Ocean. One is four times the size of France. So, mm-hmm. you know, when you get that in perspective, it's
maybe it is France.
Yeah, it could well be France, yeah. Yeah. Well, France has always been adrift in many ways, hasn't it?
But,
I'm sure the Francophiles listening will no doubt hate me for that. But no, it's a massive problem. And if this technology can be deployed and it produces hydrogen, which is a clean gas and is used for hydrogen fuel cells, then that's a fantastic way of dealing with it. It really is. And clearly, it's step by step, but you know, it's an exciting juncture at the moment. So very exciting future here for power.
Yeah, well, it's made, you know, plastic, you know, single life plastic, which they're trying to ban. It's made it worth something now, because you've got, it's basically rubbish, isn't it? It can't be recycled, but this makes it worth something. And the fact is, you know, it gasifies it and gives off very little emissions, very little noxious gas. So it's not like, you know, it's completely different to sort of incinerating rubbish, where you just basically trying to get rid of it by burning it and all noxious gas comes off. It gives off very little noxious gas and it turns it into energy. So, you know, I just think it's an amazing technology, but and if they can commercialise this, then it's good for everyone. Anything else, Al, we'll look at?
Yes, Bloomsbury Publishing, BMY. Now, Bloomsbury, of course, are best known for being publishers of the Harry Potter books, but there's an awful lot more going on there. Company worth £150 million. It's trading at just over £2, been as low as £160 on the year, as high as £257. It pays a dividend yield of 3.7%, which is a decent enough. But the company has, as well as publishing Harry Potter, it publishes across a number of different sectors. It has a Bloomsbury professional sector, which has this morning just announced a win with the Institute of Chartered Accountants for England and Wales professional titles, and that's a very prestigious contract to win. This was picked out by VectorVest last week, and as you know, as I said on numerous occasions on this podcast, VectorVest have a series of metrics on their stock analysis and portfolio system, which looks at stocks and picks out the stocks when their certain indicators are moving higher. Last week, when VectorVest looked at this, the company had a GRT, which is a growth earnings growth rating of 16%, and this was after the stock was first picked out by VectorVest back in April this year. That rating stayed the same all the way through. It's got a relative value rating of 1.25, which on a scale of 0 to 2 is very good. It hit the previous target of 219p, and currently it's sunk back to trade where it is today. VectorVest has a fundamental valuation of 220p, and a technical valuation with a charting pattern, which is a flag pattern, and if it breaks out from that, there's a technical target there of 270p. Now, this morning, Bloomsbury announced a very strong set of interim results, where it said total revenue is up 4% to $75 million. Pre-tax grew 13%. The dividend was raised by 5%. The company also acquired a company called IB Tourist during the year, and this is expected to deliver $3.5 million of revenues and $300,000 profit for the full year. And the company has just said that it's a very strong set of numbers, but historically the numbers for Bloomsbury are second half weighted, because obviously in the run up to Christmas a lot of the consumer books and titles that the company publishes sell well in the run up to Christmas, so it expects an even stronger second half. And currently the board say the company's trading in line with expectations for the full year, but given the strong first half performance and also the VectorVest indications as well, there's every chance that this could go on, and if it breaks out of that technical flag configuration on the chart, we could see the shares going as high as 270p.
I see. Was it BM? BMY, isn't it? That's right, yes.
BMY is the epic code. Yeah, that's right. BMY is the epic code. But, and again, as I said at the start, Bloomsbury, everyone looks at it and says, oh, that's the Harry Potter publisher. Take a good look at this company. There's an awful lot more there. It's got so many prestigious authors that it publishes for and so many well-known books. As a spread of risk, both on the retail and also the professional front, it has a very, very strong offering. So, well worth a look.
Yeah, I would put an alert on that at 190, I think, because I can see it as its previous resistance at 190, and may find some support there. But,
there we are. Yep.
Marvellous. Anything else, Al?
Yes, yesterday, Salt Lake Potash, the epic code is SO4, and I've spoken quite regularly about this company over the past few months. Salt Lake Potash produces sulfate of potash, which is the premium potash product, rather than the polyhalite, which is produced by or will be produced by Sirius Minerals. Salt Lake has 9 lakes in Western Australia, which are dried up lakes, which it harvests this sulfate of potash from. The company has a number of trials in place across Lake Way and several other lakes. It has takeoff agreements already with Sinofert, which is a huge Chinese fertilizer company, and Mitsubishi Australia. It expects to generate from, once it goes into production, it expects to generate $288 million of annual revenues by 2020. So that's not far at all. That's just over a year away. Yesterday, the company announced that it had appointed Tony Sverzik, I hope I pronounced that correctly, as its new CEO. And I took a look at this, at what this guy has done, and he's a pretty big hitter in the industry. Tony managed the construction of the Christmas Creek mine, which is owned by Fortescue Metals, which are a huge Australian, a huge ASX-listed iron ore company. He oversaw the commissioning and ramping up of the Christmas Creek mine from 15 million tonnes per annum to 60 million tonnes. And then he carried on a group level and optimised Fortescue Metals to become the lowest cost iron ore revenue producer in the world. So that is, that's a pretty big achievement. He said in the statement yesterday that with his background, he sees similar economies of scale and opportunities at Salt Lake Potash, which is fantastic. And I think, as I said last time with Salt Lake Potash, this company has this resource. It's got the potential to produce sulfate of potash at very, very low cost per ton, almost the lowest cost per ton anywhere in the world. And when you compare that to the company's got a valuation of about 45 and 50 million. Mm-hmm. When you compare that to Sirius Minerals, which has valuations in the billions and a much smaller market to sell to, I think we can see where this company is heading. And this, to me, appointing somebody like this is validation of the potential of this company. And I will declare here, I'm a shareholder of Salt Lake Potash, and I'm in there for the long haul. I think this company is going to really go places.
Okay, well, that's why you're a shareholder, Al. That's exactly
indeed.
Why.
Indeed.
Yeah, it does seem a disconnect there. I've been looking at it. I mean, it generally is too big for me market cap-wise, but, I mean, I will go up that size if there's massive potential, of course.
Well, I think it's the actual market. If you look at the market, the premium potash that supplies the fertilizer companies is sulfate of potash.
Yes.
Everyone seems to be focused on Sirius Minerals. Now, Sirius Minerals is producing polyhalite, which is the lower
cheap, nasty stuff. That is
cheap. That's right. That's your sort of Poundland analogy compared to sulfate of potash, which of course is your Sainsbury's or your Waitrose even. So it's at that level, and also polyhalite has a much smaller market. The potash market is huge, and it's already got a takeoff agreement with Mitsubishi Australia and Sinofert, the Chinese company. So all of the elements are in place, and I think this company's got a very exciting future.
Excellent stuff. Do you know what? It's annoying. I was watching it, but it jumped up of late, isn't it? Not massively, but it's maybe go back into the chart. SO4. I was watching this at 24 pence, getting to a nice little level there, but because it's a support level has hit that a couple of times. And again, it's bounced off it. But let's see if it'll come back to that again. It's at 28 pence now. It's a massive jump. But I always like to get a bargain. You know what I'm saying? Okay.
I hear that. But I mean, if the company's going to produce annual revenues of $288 million in 2020, that's just over a year away. You know, once we start to take tangible steps towards executing that, and judging by Tony Sferro's history with Fortescue Metals, that's going to be, he's already come in and hit the floor running. So, you know, I think we're going to be hitting milestones next year and moving towards that very quickly. So, well, get it while you can, I say.
Yeah, lovely. Cool. Anything else you want to cover?
Yeah, I'd just like to address, I was pulled up last week by quite a few of the Twitter artists saying that, quote, Alan, with respect, you might want to do a little bit more research on Vast Resources. It's clear you know very little about their operations. They're already a revenue-generating mining company. Well, I did say that. I did say the company had revenues for the period were up 29% to $30 million, profit of $2 million, up from a loss of $1.6 million last time. So I did make that clear. But I think probably what I didn't make clear was the fact that Manela, the mine in Romania, has been producing since 2015, and it's got a measured and it's producing 30,000 tons of material per month. And also in Zimbabwe, the Pixstone Peerless gold mine, in which Vast has a 25% stake, has also been producing since 2015, produces 20,000 troy ounces of gold per annum. So yeah, that's cleared that up.
Yeah, but, sounds like you have done more research.
It's all on my document here from last week when I was reading this. I think, you know, possibly I read things in the wrong order, but I apologise. I am interested in Vast Resources. It's got great potential here. Since we spoke, of course, the company's raised $500,000 and it's won the best mining award for the mines in Romania, and of course it has the Manela, which is in production, which is the company is also expanding, and the Badapply mine, which is in pre-production, which we expect to come to fruition in 2019. Also the Blueberry project, which it runs with EMA Resources, which indicates that there could be a separate IPO there sometime. So many projects in the mix there, and a very exciting future for Vast Resources, but just wanted to clear that up.
Lovely. Well, listen, you know, people have had double the coverage there now. So,
well, they have. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, Vast Resources looks very good value. They're now funded. So, and Andrew Prelia has been doing the rounds and talking through the various channels about what the company's achieved, and you know, it has taken some major steps forward in the past few weeks.
Been on here quite a few times. Maybe he should be on very soon, hopefully.
Yeah, But he's been on the premium station, which of course is Vox Markets.
Exactly. It's like we are like the top potash. You know, I mean, the sulfate of potash, not that other nonsense, cheap nonsense. Seriously.
You are the Waitrose of the financial channels. That's the one.
Marvellous, Al. Thanks for that, fella, and we'll catch up next week.
Thank you, Jess. Cheers, mate.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, IQ AI Limited. They speak, of course, Flying Brands, renamed. And hopefully you're going to get the guys on the podcast very soon. At four, Vesarion, VRS, taking a bit of a battering in the last couple of days. But I think it went down today, but it bounced, I think, today. At three, Anglo-African Oil and Gas, AAOG. At two, Jan Garda Mines, JAN. All right, Jan. Number one, again, and they've been doing very well since they've been on the podcast. I did buy a bit of stock. I've got to say, I do like the company. I do like David, the chairman. He's got a direction. He's a very successful track record. It's a live company, LVCG. They've only been listed 6 months, pretty much. Since Christmas last year, they listed. But they're already in 51 countries, including China and America, with their live sort of events company, with bricks, Lego-based sort of fan zones and all that stuff for children. It's obviously a cracking event. And there's going to be one in NEC on, I think, the weekend of 2nd to 3rd, November 2nd to 3rd, in NEC. There's a massive event there. Okay, Top five most liked RNSs came from the following companies. At five, Petromatad, spud of Wild Horse One Exploration Well. At four, Horizonte, Minerals, HZM, and I was Holdings and Company, the Lombard Odious, selling down there. And I think, of course, the sooner they're out, people are welcoming out, the better. At three, Ark Minerals. Ark initiates airborne geophysical program. At two, Greatland Gold, Patterson Project, Scallywag, targets MMI results. Scallywag. It's a good name, isn't it? And number one, most liked RNS, came from United Oil and Gas, Holdings and Company. And I think it's Spreadex, who's been a seller for a while, almost out. I think they're down to about 1 or 2% of them. I can't remember now, but it's off the top of my head. But they're down to nearly insignificant amount. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.